Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network. Emotional, creative, and often comical. Welcome to another in-depth but out-of-the-ordinary look at what it's like to write. This is Writer's Block with Coin6 News anchor Jenny Hansen.
This week on our Writer's Block podcast, Steve Mellon, who just wrote his first book, Killer Graces. You've had quite an interesting life from reading through your book. Holy crap. I mean, you've had a lot of things happen. You know, we'll get into your life story, but what inspired you? What made you want to write a book about all of this?
Well, that's a good question because I never thought I'd be writing a book. I actually didn't prefer my English side growing up versus the math side. So writing a book was the furthest thing from my mind. But I had been hearing from so many people that they really thought I should write a book. They loved each individual story and they thought it was inspiring. They thought it was wonderful. So after about 100 different people telling me I should write a book, I said, well, I'm going to start this process. And I started the process 7 years ago. Well, before things have even changed dramatically as they have to this day. So it took me 7 years to get this book out, and the story improved significantly. So I have a better ending now than I did 7 years ago.
Everyone likes a good ending. Yeah. So start at the beginning, because I know you start off talking about how the beginning of your life, played a big role in shaping your life. You were adopted.
Correct.
It sounds like your parents, it was your biological parents, it was a prom situation or something.
Yes,
like that.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I was not necessarily planned on being here. I was born in an unwed mother's home in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And at that time, this is 1970, and it was not necessarily, it wasn't looked upon very favorably. And after about 9 months, my mom decides to come out to her father's house in California. So I moved to California in 9 months, and I've been here ever since. But the crazy thing about those next couple of years, which I had zero control over, was that my mom let the word out that I had died in a car accident when I was around 2.5 years old, and to try to protect me. And then my mother had a younger sister that was in third grade, and the third grade teacher had said that she told the class that she wanted a child and wanted to adopt. So my aunt went back went to the teacher and said, my sister has a baby. Maybe you should adopt that child. A week later, I'm going for a test run at this lady's house. And I never went back. So I guess I had a stuffed animal and I had the suitcase, and I went over to do a little test run and I never went back. That was how I was adopted.
But everyone thought you died in a car crash.
Yes, everyone in Minnesota thought I died. So I didn't reconnect with my biological father until about 15 years ago. I reached out and wanted to get to know my family after my adoptive parents both died. They both died of heart attacks in their 50s. And so I ended up wanting to know where I came from and know where my history was. So I've got four half-brothers, and I've got a father, and I was just visiting all of them in Minnesota in September. I went to one of my brother's weddings. I was in it.
That alone sounds like, oh, that could be a movie. this big lie too, that, you know, it kept you from them all those years. But you've had so much happen since. So
yes.
You were diagnosed with this pretty far down the line stomach cancer. I'd never seen the term. Is it 3B? Is that right?
3B, right. Right. Yeah. I mean, stage four supposedly is the worst, right?
Yes.
That's the hardest to recover. And I didn't know what staging, I didn't know any of this stuff when I actually was being faced with these numbers.
And how many years ago was this?
This 13 years ago to this week, basically.
Okay.
So I was diagnosed this week, and then they wanted to have my surgery on January 30th at Stanford. They wanted to remove my stomach. And I said, no, you can't do this. That's my birthday. I can't be in the hospital on my 38th birthday having my stomach taken out. Mm-hmm. So we pushed it off a week later. And then on February 6th, we went in and did the surgery. It was an 8-hour surgery. They thought it went well, took my stomach out, my spleen, half my pancreas, a third of my esophagus, all that stuff out. Mm-hmm. And then I came out of it thinking it was okay. But then I code blued and they had to bring me back in. And I woke up a week later, sedated, like strapped to the bed because I was, I guess I had fought to get all the tubes out of me. Mm-hmm. So they had me on a breathing tube for a week. And I woke up after that. And that was the slow process. I spent a month in the hospital. Wow. But that was just the beginning of the, oh my gosh, like how hard is this going to be? I thought it was going to be in and out of the hospital in 1 week and surgery 8 hours and end up being a month in the hospital.
Yeah. Well, and so at the time when you were diagnosed, you were married and had a daughter,
one, right? Yes. 1 year old daughter. Yes.
Yeah. So life was going well, even though you had this childhood that had this big secret you didn't know about. So what was the progression of events after that? Cause I know, was it all after that, that you had the issues with alcoholism?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I knew that there was alcoholism and addiction in my family. Cause I'd heard when I was growing up, you ought to watch out for this, it's in your family, but I didn't, I just said, yeah, I'm having fun. I'm going out. I'm in college. So I ended up, the addiction issues really kicked in when I was in the hospital because they gave me pain meds, a pain pump. They had a team of specialists that were giving me OxyContin in the morning and oxycodone in the afternoon and a fentanyl patch and a Loratab and Ativan. And I took it. I was taking everything. And I didn't really know how bad it was until later on. And so, you get out of the hospital and I had been on a pump just getting Dilaudid every day. That pain medic addiction really lasted a little over a year. And then I finally went through hell getting off of those because I was ramping up. And then I thought I'd get back to normal life. What was I doing before? I was having a glass of wine. I was going out to dinner and socializing, going to big games, sporting events, all this, everything. Alcohol was around everywhere. Yeah. Well, my drinking alcohol changed into a different form. It was also the continuation of the numbing of the fear of death, of my childhood issues. It was just of my loneliness in my house and of losing my daughter. It was all these things. I was just drinking, and what started out being a glass of wine turned into a bottle or two, and then turned into two rehabs. So,
oh my gosh. And so your wife was sticking by you, but then at one point you got served divorce papers.
While in rehab,
right?
Talk about beating when you're down, right? Yeah. And I don't blame anyone. That the circumstances were terrible. Recovering from the cancer. I mean, my cancer recovery and my pain med addiction recovery lasted much longer than what we anticipated. So what she went through was very painful. But it got to a point where I just begged her to take me to rehab, and she said, "You go on your own." It was not fun. And that was that was May 3rd, 7 years ago. So I ended up going in there, and then the divorce and then the child custody issues and all that while I'm trying to recover from this was mentally and physically just, very difficult. So, I get out, and then I spend 6 months in sober living, and I've got a job with, I had a family, or wife and daughter, and I had all the stuff, and it was just all sort of taken away. And now I'm sitting in a house with 10 different guys of all different statures that are, and I just felt like, God, how did I get here?
Yeah.
So I spent 6 months in lots of meetings to kind of get over that issue that I had, because I was survived the stomach cancer. I was now out of it 5+ years. Mm-hmm. And now I was kind of killing myself with this other stuff. And it was just sad. And yeah. So I got over it.
How do you get over? Like, what was your, come to Jesus moment, so to speak? I mean, how do you get? Because I would think a lot of people would just wallow and, not be able to get out of that.
It was super, super hard. I think I did not want my daughter at the time was now 6 years old, and she was getting into the age where she knew she was seeing things, and I wasn't necessarily I didn't feel at this time like I was a father or a husband or a man even. I felt like I lost all those things, and I needed to get back to what I thought was strength, masculinity, all these different things that I was losing. Being a provider, being a father for my little daughter, and she was seeing, and I didn't want her to remember me as being this sad person. So, and I know that we sort of solidify memories somewhere around this age. You know, you don't really remember as much when you're 2, 3, and 4. I have spot memories, but it's 6 and 7, you start to remember things. And I wanted to be at my daughter's wedding, and I wanted to be see her grow up, and I didn't want her to have this memory. So I said, she was ended up being my real inspiration to do all this. And little did I know that I'd be where I am now through all of that. But at the time, I was just saying, I need to get through today. And, you know, it was like hour to hour at sometimes. And then it was day to day. And then it was week to week. And I was just, I felt like such a loser. Like I would, you know, from rehab to sober living to not being able to see my daughter without supervised visits. Oh my God, just, it was killing me.
Yeah. So where are you today? And as far as your relationship with her or with, you know, your wife, and I know you write a lot about you were used to being the fun guy at the parties, and now you still want to be at the parties, and you're not drinking, you know.
Right.
So where are you in life now?
Well, I have found that I'm on my second act now, and I like to be part of the party. I like to go. My friends in college and high school still all go out, and I'm now their driver. I'm now their, we travel around to Mexico. And I mean, I had, last year I turned 50. I had 40 friends in Mexico for my 50th birthday, like we're all together. Like that, that I've known since I was 5 years old to college. And so they're all partying. They're wild, fun, crazy, but I like to be part of the party. I make the best of it, and I don't feel that I'm missing anything. They're now actually somewhat envious of me for not having to live that. And I wake up in the morning fine.
Yeah, I'm hungover. They probably actually love you being there because there's a designated driver, like you said.
So, yeah. Yeah. You know what? Their respect for me, I think, is just amazing. They're not giving me crap for not being part of the party. Right. I did not want to be ostracized from my friends. Right. And I wanted to, and they've been supporting me through the whole thing. So, and then my relationship with my daughter, I just went skiing with her 4 days. We have the best time together. We do a lot of physical activities, skiing, skateboarding, bike riding. She plays multiple sports, and I have a stepson now, which I never thought I would have another child because of the chemo and the radiation that I went through. That knocked everything out, you know, right after. I thought I was going to be able to be more of a family man. And my life changed pretty quickly with that. And so now I have a stepson that is the son that I never thought I would have. Now, keep in mind, they're both 14 and they're teenagers that are very difficult at many times, but
I have a 13-year-old, so I'm.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and rough. Then I got married to my high school first. You know, I hadn't seen her in 25 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I met her through my first racehorse that I bought named Killer Graces, which is the name of my book.
Mm-hmm.
So, we reconnected and then we got married a couple of years ago. So, the challenges continue. I put her through a little scare 2 years ago on our anniversary with my gallbladder was gangrene. So I had that. I spent 8 days in the hospital. So the challenges, I call them challenges, not problems anymore. They still come up, but I'm as happy as I've ever been.
Yeah.
And that's strange to get to be this age. And now you say that. I mean, high school was fun. College was great. After college was amazing. But right now I'm as fulfilled and happy as I've ever been. And that's what I'm trying to spread this message through the book to that we all go through things and they're very serious. Yeah. And everyone has a big problem to themselves and it's different levels to them, but to them it's a big deal. So
yeah. That's a lot of problems that you had to pull yourself out of, you know, and
yes.
You didn't even mention, I did read the parts about you having panic attacks, which can be a really big deal too. I've known people in my personal life that, you know, I had to take them to the hospital because they were having, you know, you think you're going to die. So
right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that this is in my family. My biological mother, she actually has these things and has never been able to kind of get through this for her whole life. Me, I started to have these. I had my first one in college. I ran out of my first class in college. I was just overwhelmed and I didn't know what it was. And so I went to therapy for 17 years trying to figure this stuff out. And, you know, and really I discovered a level of calm after going through the cancer stuff and knowing that things can get much worse and you really can die from physical stuff and getting sober. Just happened to be the thing for me that actually brought me, instead of these highs and lows that were extreme, it was my high, you know, it's less highs. And I mean, it's the band is less. I don't have these panic episodes now. Like I could not get up in front of people and communicate years ago. It was terrifying. Now it's, I can handle it. It's just strange. It took me a lot of money in therapy and a lot of stress to get to the point where I got over that. And I think that's why the alcohol picked up throughout the years, because it's kind of alleviated that stress a little bit. So I was self-medicating.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do that. I mean, even when I know when I've emceed, I hate talking in front of people. I mean, I do it for a living, but they're cameras, you know, they're not actual people. And I've emceed events where they'll offer a glass of wine and I'm like, yes, please. Because, you know, I figure that way I'll be a little more, you know, something.
I totally
see that.
This is your business. This is your business. You're in front of things, but you're right. Camera, but you still different. Do it. Well, that's great that you get through it. You know you'll survive.
Yeah, some days more than others. Have you had a lot of people reach out to you since your book came out? Or people emailing and thanking you for sharing this? Or maybe they're going through something somewhat similar. You kind of had this whole perfect storm of bad things happening. But I can't imagine someone was going through this much stuff. But,
no, I tried to put, there's like five stories in one that I kind of tried to combine into this. So I wanted someone to be able to relate to maybe one, whatever their level was. But I don't want people to relate to all of them. Yeah. So yes, it is fascinating the people that reached out to me through the different, through LinkedIn, through social medias, through phone calls, that one gentleman that I went to college with diagnosed with cancer a week after he read my book and came to me, and I've helped him in the last, this is just 3 months, 4 months ago. And he said, I've helped him more than any of his other doctors because it gave him some inspiration and hope. He's got two little kids, you know, he's early 50s and he's scared. And now when people want to communicate with someone else that they know, someone that they know is diagnosed, they come to me and say, what do I say? You know, what questions do I ask? And you know, I just give input on how they can communicate with people, or sometimes they just need to know that I exist to know that they have a chance. So I'm kind of like in my stomach cancer world, I'm one of the longest survivors with this staging. And I mean, selfishly, I think I'm probably doing as better than anyone that I know out of thousands of people I know with this. And I don't know what that really is. I've been on 25 airplanes in the last 6 months. Wow. I've been to Panama and Cabo.
Especially during right now. That's crazy.
Right. Right. It's crazy. People say it's crazy, but I'm safe when I do that. But I do live life to the fullest, and I live day to day, but I think about making sure everyone is okay. So my friends are all looking to me for inspiration and hope. And that's kind of what I'm looking to pass on.
Yeah. I did read the part where you talked about that saying, that you could get hit by a bus tomorrow, which is something like, I'll say that a lot, you know, if I'm going to do something dangerous, like I jumped out of a plane for a story and my husband was giving me grief. And I'm like, well, I could die on the way there. And so you said you always kind of thought that was cliche, but after going through all this, you realize there is a lot of truth to that, right?
Well, things have changed in an instant a couple times for me. And the day that I got that diagnosis, it was just in a snap. I said, one day I had the house, the wife, the thing, and the vacations, all that. And then the next day I'm in the hospital wondering if I'm going to make it. And I can't get up out of bed. And when you see how quickly things can change, not including getting in these accidents that people have and people dying. I mean, what's today or yesterday, the anniversary of Kobe Bryant, right? He passed away, right? Yeah. That, I mean, how in an instant, how those things can change. And I've experienced that. And I think that you have to be careful about living too much too full, right? Because I did that at first with the alcohol. I'll drink it. I'll do whatever I want. I'll do it my way, like Frank Sinatra. I'm going to go my way. Well, my way wasn't really, I didn't really want to stop this whole, but I found a different way to interact in society that's full of alcohol, but I can still be part of the party, but not damaging and destroying myself. Yeah. And so I live to the fullest on a daily, but I'm a, living in the present, but looking in the future as I walk toward that future. But
what is the prognosis for your health? I mean, what do doctors say now? I mean, are you pretty much?
They don't care about me anymore. They don't even see me unless I went in for my annual checkup in December with my primary, but it had been 3 years. I hadn't even seen him. I'm supposed to go every year. And I'm fine. Yeah. I haven't had a CT scan, but I had a scare this summer because my esophagus was closing up and I've had four, even this last week, I had a endoscopy where they had to stretch my throat out. And that's from the radiation that I had 12 years ago. So I have things that I'm still dealing with. It's not all pretty and fun.
Yeah.
And party.
So like even though they took everything out, then there's all the side effects and everything.
Right. I went 10, 11 years without really having any problem. And then the gallbladder went, sideways 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that got taken out. And then my esophagus started to close up. So they've been stretching that out. I have a iron infusion tomorrow. You know, that like I'm still doing these things that are not fun.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like.
No,
but you look good.
For me, it's like I feel pokes.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good. I mean, I'm just in my 50s now, and I'm skinny, right? You know, so
hey, that
sounds
like
thing,
I had that
gain weight. I know. When you're younger, you're.
I'm 45. I'm almost there. So, the weight thing.
Like people laugh at me because they go, "How do I? You know, I wish I had that problem about weight. I can eat whatever I want now. Have to moderate my quantity because I get extra full without having a stomach."
Mm. Wow. Okay. So, and as far as your career, I mean, you obviously have written this book, and that's been released. What are you doing career wise, and what are your plans?
Well, I for fun, I have multiple racehorses. So I actually travel around and go to the horse races, and that gives me hence the book was named after Killer Graces, my first racehorse. Mm-hmm. So that's my fun side hobby. Personally, I'm a financial advisor, and I've been working with my clients and adding more for the last 25 years. And I've been very dedicated and successful, and they've all stayed with me and they've referred people. Like I wasn't sure how this book would, like if I had disclosed the stuff that I was really going on, but my real clients who have been with me, they've seen this and they've been with me the whole time. So we've been doing really well. So it's been a win-win for everyone. Everyone's happy with what I've done for them. And then they've helped me survive too, because I felt the responsibility to be there for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do professionally.
Yeah. Okay. So if people can find your book on Amazon, I mean, anywhere where you can find books.
Amazon, right. Killer Graces. And I have a website, Steve Mellon, MELEN.com. That a lot of pictures on there of kind of the fun stuff, but there's a couple of the bad ones, but mainly it shows where you can get the book as far, and also what I'm doing, and I'll be updating that too.
Yeah, no, I looked at the pictures on the website, and I think I did see some of the horse race pictures, because you have like the jaunty hat on. Is that what I'm thinking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like you got the Kentucky Derby or something. Yeah.
I've been to that. I've been to that four times.
There you go.
The Breeders' Cup Kentucky Derby. I've been to all the parties around the world. The Oktoberfest and Jazz Fest and Mardi Gras but the Kentucky Derby is probably one of my top favorite of all time.
Nice. Well, Steve, thanks for talking to us today. It's such an interesting story.
Well, thank you for the interview. I love it.
Best of luck with everything.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.